What came next is intended for mature audiences only. Episodes discuss topics that can be triggering, such as emotional, physical, and sexual violence, animal abuse, suicide, and murder. I am not a therapist, nor am I a doctor. If you're in need of support, please visit somethingwaswrong.com/resources for a list of nonprofit organizations that can help. Opinions expressed by my guests on the show are their own and do not necessarily represent the views of myself or Broken Cycle Media. Resources and source material are linked in the episode notes. Thank you so much for listening. Angelique Robledo is an incredible mother and survivor living in Arizona. She was born in Southern California, but after a pivotal move nearly 400 miles east in her middle school years, she found herself having trouble fitting in. Several years later, and not long after finding out she was pregnant, Angelique was introduced by a mutual friend to a Maricopa newcomer who she seemed to have a lot in common with. Over the next several months, she would get to know the also 18-year-old via text and social media. They would discuss their pregnancies and build what Angelique considered a friendship. But everything changed on February 16, 2011, when their burgeoning relationship became nearly lethal. The Broken Cycle Media team is deeply honored and grateful that Angelique was willing to so rawly share about her experiences and all that came next for her. After courageously surviving an alleged attempted fetal abduction and attempted arson.
Hi, my name is Angelique Robledo. If I asked my friends if they could describe me, they would say that I'm somebody that's dependable. I get along with every single person that I've ever met. I work customer service, so I feel like I ultimately have that customer service personality. I believe that in order to understand somebody's story, you have to start from the beginning. Because I do believe deep down that in order to understand why the people made the choices that they made is by understanding who they were before that incident happened to them. I was born in Anaheim, California. I grew up in the Brea, California area. My childhood was amazing. I grew up in a Mexican household. So like family is literally everything. I do feel like my parents kind of protected me from bad things in the world. Not saying that I didn't know bad things could happen. Growing up, I had three brothers, one that's 5 years younger than me and then 10 years younger than me. And then my stepbrother is about a year older than me. Technically, I thought he was my half brother until I became 14, 15 years old and I learned the truth that I had a different dad. I loved my brothers. I still do. I feel like I've always been their protector. My dad, he isn't my biological father, but he might as well be. He has raised me since I was 9 days old, but I grew up thinking that my dad was my dad. I played soccer since I was 4 years old, went all the way through varsity as a freshman. So I would say hobby-wise was just basically sports. My best friend was my next door neighbor. She's still my best friend till this day. I used to go to Knott's Berry Farm all the time. Altogether, I feel like I had such a great childhood. Things shifted when we moved from California to Arizona, and it happened to be in my seventh grade year. Let's say that you're driving through Phoenix, you're on the I-10, and all of a sudden there's this little road called the 347. You start taking this road, and it feels like you're going in the middle of nowhere. It's about 13 to 15 miles, and all you see on each side of you is just dirt, just desert for miles and miles. You can't see anything else. You'll see wild horses, you'll see a bunch of tumbleweeds, bunch of dust devils, and then all of a sudden you enter this town, you'll see the sign that says Maricopa. From when I first moved there, it only took 7 minutes to get from one side of the town to the other side of the town. That's if you didn't get caught by the train. There was a train station there, and if you got caught by the Amtrak, you were stuck for like an hour. There was a few different developments that were opening up. Also, we have a huge reservation here. So a lot of our land is reservation land. And that changed everything in my life because I went from being this really goody two shoe girl who lived in a mobile home park while all my other friends had these big mansions. And then we moved to Arizona and went from living in a mobile home park to living in this 5-bedroom house with a big backyard with a pool. It was almost like everything had changed in our lives. But with change also came a new school in 7th grade. We had one school that was a high school, middle school, and elementary all put together. So when I first went to middle school, I was walking in between classes between high schoolers and elementary schoolers. The first time that I had ever seen a graduating class of Maricopa, it was 26 people. They were able to fit on one part of a newspaper with big portraits. Everybody that has been there has been with them since kindergarten or 1st grade. So I was new. And unfortunately, that navigated to where all the guys wanted to help me get to class. And that put like a bad taste in everyone's mouth of who I was. I remember my first week of school, the girls didn't like me. And then someone spread a rumor about me. And I remember eating lunch in the bathroom in a stall by myself crying because I felt like I couldn't go sit with anybody or eat with anybody being in Maricopa. It was a complete opposite of what I was used to. And so it was hard trying to navigate my life to have other people like me because they didn't like me for who I was. So I felt like I had to change everything about myself in order for them to like me. Growing up, I always wanted to be a nurse. And when I moved to Maricopa, all my dreams had gone away. All I cared about was partying, drinking, hanging out. That's literally what I maintained my life around, which is really sad to say, but that's just the honest truth. I stopped thinking about ambitions and dreams. I made wrong choices. I did a lot of things I'm not proud of. Unfortunately, I did fall down a really bad path of doing meth. The best way I can put it is like when you're in school and they were showing us all those videos that say it only takes one time and you're sitting there rolling your eyes. It's true. That's all it takes. And I was hooked. There was no going back for me. I felt like I couldn't escape and I felt like I just constantly wanted to keep doing it. It really was very difficult, almost living like a double lifestyle. And about 4 months in, I found out I was pregnant with Ryland. And I've been clean and sober since the day that I went to my first ultrasound. Ryland altogether saved my life in different ways that he'll never understand. My husband now, everybody always wonders who Ryland's dad is. That's him. His name is Josh. We were just really, really good friends. And one thing led to another. We hooked up one night. 6 weeks later, I start feeling all these symptoms. I'm still doing meth. I'm working at Jack in the Box. And me and my coworkers are doing drugs together. I start to tell them, weird things are happening to me. I could just feel like certain things in my body that were different altogether. My boobs hurt. I was nauseated. I was doing drugs and I couldn't stay awake. That was the biggest indicator for me was no matter how much drugs I was doing, I was having a lot of crashes. I told them, like, I think I'm pregnant. And I didn't want to take a test because then it would become reality for me. I remember coming home from work. I went upstairs and my mom was sitting on my bed and she threw a pregnancy test at me. And she was like, take the test. And I was like, why? She's like, because you haven't had your period. Very much mother's instinct. She just knew that something was up with me. I ended up taking that test. It says takes 3 minutes, but man, within 30 seconds, that thing was positive as can be. I found out I was pregnant in July of 2010. The night that I told Josh, I was pissed off that I was pregnant and I got high. I remember my stepbrother came in. He found all my stuff, flushed it down the toilet. This was probably my lowest moment, sitting there crying at the toilet because he flushed everything. And I remember sitting there with a wrench in my hand, trying to figure out how I can take the toilet off so I can reach my hand in and grab the baggie. That's how far gone I felt. And when I started to realize how badly I wanted it, it made me realize, holy crap, this is how my life is going to be. I woke up the next morning. I asked Josh to meet me at the park. I went down there and it was like 100 degrees in a hoodie and sweatpants. And I said, all I want to do is smoke right now. If I don't have this baby, that's what my life is going to be like from now on. And I cannot do that. I can't be the statistic of this. I would rather be a teen mom and raise my child than have an abortion because I want to continuously get high. And he supported me with that. I had told him that I didn't want to be with him in a relationship because he was with somebody else on and off. He broke up with that girl and was like, I'm having a baby with Angelique. I need to be with her. And I was like, I'm not going to be with you because you feel obligated to be my boyfriend. If you want to be with me, you can prove to me and show to me that you're going to be here with me for the right reasons, not just because I'm having your baby. So it took until I was 7 months for me to finally call him my boyfriend. But we had been dating. I was just being very stubborn. But we were very much together throughout this whole thing. We put our anniversary date when we went to go see Ryland on the ultrasound. He drug tested me throughout part of the pregnancy in the very beginning because I still hung out with some of the friends and he didn't trust it. So I very much thank Josh because he kept me on track of keeping my word of staying clean. That was the start of me just having to learn to change my life around. But it was a choice that I made, and it's probably one of the best choices I've ever made in my life. Because I quit doing drugs, I very much was going through a lot of withdrawals. So it was really harsh the first 3 months of me learning how to deal with the morning sickness, also with withdrawals, and then also being a teenager going to high school. There weren't a lot of pregnant teens around that time. There may have been one person that I knew of that was pregnant. The school at this point has gotten bigger. So being there in seventh grade to now being a senior in high school, everything kind of got moved around. They had to create their own middle school. The elementary kids got moved out. So it did feel like a real high school at this point. But it was really difficult to be pregnant and go to high school. I was constantly throwing up. I wasn't feeling good. So I actually did drop out and I got my GED. After I hit my first trimester, everything started to get easier. I did notice what I think a lot of pregnant teens go through is your friends start to shy away because you can't do the same things that they can do. All my friends were seniors in high school and they were having the time of their life, as they should, but I couldn't go to the parties and drink and hang out with everybody. I didn't go to prom. I didn't go to homecoming. I didn't do everything that they were doing, which was really difficult to watch because it made me really sad. That ultimately is what brought me into wanting to find somebody who was pregnant just like I was to relate to. It had to have been like the end of November, maybe beginning of December of 2010 when I had officially met Cassandra. One day, one of my friends, her name is Hannah, texted me and was like, I haven't seen you in a while. Do you want to have lunch with me? And I was like, yeah, absolutely. Like, that sounds great. She was like, I actually met this girl. Her name is Cassandra, and she is pregnant just like you are. I was 6 months at that time, and she was about 3 to 4 months. She was like, so she's a little bit behind you, but I figured she's new to our town. You're pregnant. She's pregnant. How do you feel about meeting her? And I was like, yeah, I would love that. We ended up going to go meet up. They picked me up from my house. We went to Denny's, and we just sat down and we ate. Me and her related so much. I don't exactly remember what our conversations were about, but they were just about whatever teenagers probably talk about. I found out that she had a husband, which was definitely different because we both had just turned 18 in October. Having a husband definitely was just something I never thought of. I kind of related to her with Josh, like things that we got mad about our boyfriends or husbands about, morning sickness, my back hurts. It was just so nice to talk to somebody who understood what I was going through. And I could tell also that she just looked like somebody that needed a friend. I related so much to the fact that it was difficult for her to find friends out here. So that pulled me in because I felt like that was me in seventh grade. So I wanted to be her friend. I wanted to be that support system for her because I felt like I didn't have that growing up. So we had met and ate lunch that day. And it turned into even more. So we actually ended up going to the mall right after. And then after that, we even went to Babies R Us. Hannah had a baby at 16 and her son was my godson. We had all went to Babies R Us because she had to get something. Me and Cassandra bonded over finding like baby presents. We both created a baby registry. I really did feel like she was going to be like a really good friend of mine at that point. We exchanged phone numbers. We did exchange Facebooks, but it was mainly MySpace that we had talked on. And from that point on, we had talked, maybe not every single day, but like every other day. We would just talk about how we're feeling, or if she was upset with her husband, she would write me and vent. I felt like we were really good friends. We had never actually hung out one-on-one by ourselves. I invited her to my baby shower and she wasn't able to make it. I don't exactly know what the reason was. That turned into her asking me to come to her house a few times to get my baby shower gifts. But I was 9 months pregnant. I did not want to leave the house. I actually was not feeling good. At the time, I didn't know I was preeclamptic. So I told her, like, I don't really want to go anywhere, but if you want to come to my house, you're more than welcome to come and hang out. And she was like, yes, absolutely. The next day she came to my house and the whole reasoning again was just because she wanted to drop off baby shower gifts. She got dropped off. My mom was there. My brothers were there. There was no scenario that I didn't feel safe or that I even thought there was a reason why I shouldn't feel safe. We were just doing normal girl things. We were watching 16 and Pregnant, and she ended up hanging out with me all day long at my house, which was fine. There was even a moment where I did try to get her to leave my house because I was tired and I wanted to take a nap. But every time I tried to come up with something, she would come up with some type of excuse as to why she couldn't leave. So she pretty much stayed there all day. Hanging out with her, I started to realize a couple different things about her. There was moments where I felt like she was mimicking my life. I was talking with my mom and I noticed that whenever I told a story about my life from when I was younger, all of a sudden she had the exact same story, which I just kept on thinking in my head, why does she keep mimicking me? And it almost started to annoy me. I do remember there was a moment, it was just me and my mom. Cassandra, I think, was going to the bathroom. And I was like, what are you feeling when you talk to her? She's like, nothing. Why? And I was like, I don't know. I think she's weird. My mom was just like, Angelique, you're being judgmental. She's somebody who just moved to this town. Her mother passed away. Her dad's not here. She lives with her sister. She doesn't have anybody that she actually knows. She just seems like somebody who's lost and broken and just wants to be accepted. My mom had really changed my mindset of she's somebody who just wants attention and she wants to be liked. So she pretty much stayed there all day. It now had hit about 6 o'clock at night. The sun was starting to go down and my mom was like, I'm going to go to the boys' football practice. Do you guys want to come with us? And I was starting to feel good at that moment. So I was like, yeah, that sounds good. And Cassandra was like, no, I want to stay home. I don't feel good. I'm starting to get like these cramps. And I was like, okay, fine, mom, you go ahead and leave. My mom ended up leaving, which then put us together by ourselves. Now, the whole reason she came to my house was because she told me that she had baby shower gifts for me. I had completely forgot about these gifts. She brought this big diaper bag. I'm guessing my gifts were in there because once my mom left, she took a chair and she set it in the middle of my kitchen. She told me to sit in the chair, turn around and close my eyes, which I thought was really strange. I don't think I've ever heard of anyone getting gifts that way, but I did it. And I just sat there and one by one, she would come up behind me and she would drop a present in my lap. None of them were wrapped. It was like a baby onesie, booties, a beanie, a pacifier, little socks. It felt like it was one of everything, like what you would put in your hospital bag when you're going to go deliver a baby. But at that moment, I wasn't thinking about that. I just kept saying, thank you. I remember grabbing the clothes and smelling them, and they reeked like cologne. It literally smelled like they were used. But my mom had always taught me not to be rude. Whatever you get, you just say thank you. The last gift that she gave me was this baby carrier. And I think I always confuse people when I say that. It's one of those baby wearing items. And they were expensive. Like being an 18-year-old, $100 on this baby wearing object. It did feel a little weird that she was giving me something like that because I don't know her that well to that extent to drop that kind of money on me. And I kept telling her, I can't accept this. And she was like, listen, I got two for my baby shower. And I just feel this special bond with you. You've just been nothing but kind to me and accepting of me. Like, it's really difficult to be in a place that I don't know and to not feel accepted. But you and your family have literally made me feel this way. That made my heart feel so warm and fuzzy inside because my goal was to make her not feel how I felt growing up in Maricopa. I wanted her to feel accepted. I wanted her to feel like she could talk to me. It felt so good to know that she had felt so comfortable with me. So I had let my guard down completely at that point. All these bad things that I was thinking of her being weird or thinking that she's trying to mimic my life, all those red flags had went away because of that conversation. It just made me feel like I'm being judgmental and I just need to move on. She had told me at the very end that she had one last present for me and that it was a special surprise and that it was something that I really wanted. I had told her, something that I didn't get that were like the pillow pets. It was like a pet and it had stars and it would shine on the ceiling. It would sing music. I wanted one so badly. They weren't expensive or anything, but I just wanted one. She was like, I got one of those things that you wanted, the lights. And I was like, oh my gosh, no, you didn't. She was like, yes, but it was specially made for Ryland. So she had convinced me that she had got it where it spells his name out. I was so excited. It was ridiculous. She was like, well, let me show you in your room because it's dark and I can show you on the wall. So we went back to my room. She did exactly what she did when we were in the kitchen. She turned off the lights and she asked me to turn around and close my eyes. And I was like, well, why do I have to close my eyes? It's already dark. She was like, just turn around and close your eyes. I just want it to be a surprise. I turned around. It felt like I was standing there forever, but I was probably standing there for about a minute. And all of a sudden, I don't know how to explain it, but everything changed with the energy that I was feeling. It was literally like somebody was telling me that something was going to happen to me before it even happened. All of a sudden, this thought came into my head. What if she were to hurt you? How would you protect yourself? And then it was like this other part of me was like, why are you thinking that? It was like a conversation that I was having back and forth in my head. And then I started to think, what would happen if she stabbed you? And then I started to scare myself. None of it was making sense to me, but I was getting really, really scared and really nervous. And so I turned around so that I can kind of see her. But again, it's pitch dark. I told her, I'm going to sit on my bed and I'll wait for the gift because my back is hurting. And she goes, okay. So she grabs her bag and she gets on top of the bed so that she's behind me again. And I'm like, what are you doing? She's like, well, I'm just going to come over your head and show you the light. It's going to shine on your closet door. I'm sitting there and she's still digging through this bag. My hands were starting to sweat and I had my phone in my hand. I put my mom's phone number in the phone and I put it to my chest. I'm still sitting there and these thoughts are all in my head. I have my finger on the call button and there's no real reason as to why I'm feeling like this, except for that it's just this feeling that I have like I'm going to die. It was so intense that I couldn't stop it. I remember her putting her hand on my shoulder and she goes, are you ready? And I was like, yes. And she was like, ready? 1, 2. And right when she said 3, this voice told me, get up. And I remember standing up immediately and I ran and turned the light on. And when I did that, she was putting whatever was in her hand back into the bag. And I was like, what are you doing? She looked at me and all of a sudden her phone rang. And she grabbed the phone and she was talking to somebody in Spanish. And I remember thinking in my head, what just happened? And I had to keep reminding myself, obviously I'm still here. I'm not dead. So I did walk out of the room as she was speaking to somebody on the phone. I just had to replay what had happened. I was trying to collect my thoughts on what happened. I went and sat in the kitchen and started painting my nails. I'm extremely ADHD. I had to replay everything in my head step by step. I had felt at that moment that I had lost my freaking mind. I kept thinking, like, what if she was trying to kill me? I've watched way too much true crime and way too much SVU to know that you never let the killer know that you know they're about to die. Also, I am a teenager, and what if I do accuse her of trying to kill me, and all she was trying to do was give me a gift, and now my whole town of my friends, because we now shared the same friends, think I'm crazy. So it was two different things that I was battling. I was battling the fear of what's going to happen if I'm wrong. And I was battling the fear of, I don't want her to know that she's going to kill me because then I'm going to die. And I had to keep reminding myself, well, nothing happened to you. Maybe she really was trying to give you a gift. It almost felt like I was super paranoid, but I also did not want to let go of that feeling. So something came upon me where I just wanted to find out more. What happened was she got off the phone and she came into the kitchen and she sat down. I was like, who was that? And she was like, oh, it's Edwin. He just wants to take me out to dinner. In my head, I thought she's about to leave. She's not trying to hurt you. She's going to be leaving right now with her husband. So she was like, he wants to go out to dinner, but I have nothing to wear. And I was like, why don't you go through my closet? You can find something to wear and then have him pick you up and you can leave. This in my head was like, this is the perfect opportunity to get her out of my house. At the same time, I'm not letting go of the feeling that I had or what just happened in my room, but I'm actually way too scared to ask her or confront her. So I let her try something on in my room. Before I do that, though, I went into my room and I lit a candle right before she went in. and then she closed the door. There is no reasoning as to why I lit this candle. I just lit it because I like the way candles smell. I had sat back in the kitchen. She was trying the clothes on. She came out and she was like, "What do you think about this?" I was like, "That's cute. You can totally have that." And I went into my room. And when I went in there, I could smell something burning. I looked at the candle and the candle was out. The fan was off. The window wasn't open. And I asked her, "How did the candle go out?" She was like, "Oh, I don't know. I didn't even notice it was on." And I was like, "Huh, that's weird. It smells like something's burning." And she was like, "I don't smell anything." So then I start searching my room. I looked under my bed. I looked in the drawers, my closet. I started thinking that she was starting my room on fire. There's no indication, though, except for the fact that a candle is out. But I am convinced in my head that there is something crazy going on in my house right now, and she's trying to burn my house down. So what do? I want to test my theory. So I take another candle and I light it and I wait to see what she does. All of a sudden she goes, "Can I try this on?" And I was like, "Yeah, go ahead." So I watched her grab my clothes. I watched her go back into the room and she locked the door. And at that point, I'm now staring at my door. My pantry is diagonal from it. And I start going through chips, acting like I'm trying to get a snack for her. And I'm like, "Are you hungry?" And she's like, "Oh yeah." And I'm like, "Do you want some chips?" We're talking through the door, but I'm yelling. And I can see her shadow and she's pacing back and forth in my room. And now I'm preparing myself because I'm like, I'm right. She's doing something in my room. Something's going on. I don't know what, but I'm prepared for whatever's about to happen. And so she opens the door. I barge my way in there and I look at the candle and I'm like, "Why is the candle out again?" She starts stuttering and I'm like, "What's going on in here?" I'm convinced that there's smoke coming from somewhere. I can't physically see it, but I can smell it. So I'm searching everywhere that's around my room, near my room, the bathroom. And then I do the same thing where I look in the drawers, I look under the bed. And this time when I open my closet, all of my clothes are on fire. I had just looked in the closet not even 3 to 5 minutes ago, and there was nothing in sight. But now my whole closet, flames are everywhere. All my clothes are burning. And I go into straight panic mode. And instead of calling 911, I ended up just pressing send, 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 send. And it called my best friend, who lives on my street. So I had called him and I'm just screaming, like, "My house is on fire, call 911. And as I'm doing that, I'm running back and forth from the kitchen. I grab two pots and pans and I throw one at Cassandra and I'm like, "Help me put the fire out." And in my head, I know that she started it, but my brain is telling me put the fire out. And so I'm running back and forth, 9 months pregnant, trying to put the fire out. I don't know if she was actually helping or not, but I do remember at one point, I started to get the fire to go out, but I was coughing so much, I felt like I was about to pass out, and she was coughing a lot. So once I thought the fire was out, I opened the garage door, which was right next to my bedroom. Smoke had started flowing out of my house. I grabbed her by her collar, and I dragged her out of the house because she was coughing so much. By the time we made it out of the house, we both had smoke inhalation, and my best friend pulled up with his mom and his little brother. When that had happened, he was just trying to help me because I was having contractions at that point. He was like, "The paramedics are on the way. The fire department's on their way." He has zero clue what's happening. She is just basically acting like everything's fine. I pulled my friend aside and I talked to him and I'm like, "Skylar, I need you to pinky promise me that you're not going to say anything." He was like, "Okay." And I said, "I think she was trying to kill me. I think she started my house on fire." I'm saying this all like really fast to him. He's staring at me like I'm crazy. He's like, "Why would she try to hurt you?" And I'm like, "I don't know." He's like, "Why would she start your house on fire?" And I'm like, "I don't know." This is why I don't want to tell anybody though, because the way you're looking at me makes me feel crazy. And even then, as I was telling him, I had no reason to believe why she should hurt me. I had been nothing but nice to her. Especially when you're going through it, you're trying to figure out what makes sense and nothing makes sense at that time. But seeing his reaction definitely made me backpedal. I had felt like if my best friend doesn't believe me, I am delusional. So I started to believe that that was true. As that happens, the police department shows up, the fire department shows up, the paramedics show up, and my mom and dad show up. The fire department and my dad go inside the house and the fire actually did restart. I didn't put it out all the way. So they were in there putting the fire out. I'm just hoping that the fire department can figure out what started the fire so that there's an explanation. I did hear them come out and they pulled out one of my laptops and they were like, "Oh, the battery." So in my head, I was like, maybe a battery exploded. maybe there is some type of explanation behind all of this. And that's what I was hoping for. I was in extreme pain because I had so much smoke inhalation that I was having contractions, and so was she. After I get some water and IV fluids, it definitely is helping a lot. After I get the oxygen, they start to ask a few questions. And I remember my mom was sitting there with me, and she was trying to go back and forth between Cassandra and I, trying to comfort both of us. But I told her, Mom, go ahead and just talk to Cassandra. Like, I have Skylar and Skylar's mom. Go comfort her. So my mom goes over there, and she starts to realize that things are off. Cassandra is now giving a different address, how many months she is, her phone number, like everything that she was saying was not what she had told us. And my mom was starting to catch on, like, why is she lying? And I remember she was on the phone with somebody, and she was like, oh, me and Angelique are just going to have our babies together. Angelique, what hospital are you going to? Can you make sure I go to the same hospital that she goes to? And I'm looking at the paramedics, and I'm like, don't tell her where I'm going. They're like, don't worry, we won't. But my contractions had stopped, and so I declined going to the hospital. She was still in pain, and she was going to still go to the hospital at that point. So I am sitting there, and they're starting to get the oxygen off of me, get the blood pressure machine off. And I see Skylar talking to his mom, who is then talking to my parents. And then they all look at me. And in my head, I'm just like, Skylar broke his promise. He told his mom what I had said. And his mom had told my parents. Cassandra's still sitting outside with the paramedics, and they pull me inside the house. They're like, what is going on? Skylar told us that you thought you were going to die and that you think she started your house on fire. Why do you think these things? And I'm trying to explain to them. She put me in a chair. She told me to turn around and close my eyes. She kept giving me gifts one by one. It was really weird and awkward. And then I told them about my room, how I started having these weird feelings, how she put her hand on my shoulder. She counted to three. I talked about the fire, how it started. And they're staring at me like I have 10 heads. I can tell that they're trying to comfort me. They're trying to understand. They want to believe me. The paramedics come in and they say, Cassandra wants to go to the hospital. She says that her contractions are out of control. So they start grabbing my clothes, the ones that she was trying on. And I was like, no, those are my clothes. Here's the bag that she brought. As I'm handing them the bag, I start bringing the bag back to myself. And I'm like, wait. And I put the bag on top of the counter so everybody can see. And I go, Mom, she kept saying that she had this light for me. It was a special light made for Rylan that it said his name and it would show like on the wall. I said, if this light is in here, this proves that I'm overreacting. And as I'm opening the bag, I'm putting my hand in, all I feel is metal. And I instantly pull out two large butcher knives, a pair of scissors, and disinfect it. I drop everything on the counter and I start screaming. I just kept saying the same thing over and over and over again. I told you she was going to kill me. I told you she was going to kill me. And at that point, they had already taken her and put her into the ambulance, and they took her to the hospital. They shut my street down as an attempted murder scene, so nobody could get in and nobody could get out. And that's how the whole investigation started.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Next week on What Came Next.
Rylan's now 2 weeks old. In the middle of the night, me and Josh were asleep, and my mom woke me up. She had me come out into her room, and she said, Angelique, I have somebody on the phone for you. And it was Detective Turner. She said, Angelique, we got her. And I said, what do you mean we got her? She's like, she confessed everything. She confessed that she was going to kill you, perform a C-section on you to take your unborn child, and that she started the fire to burn your body down with all the evidence.
What Came Next is a Broken Cycle Media production, co-produced by Amy B. Chesler and Tiffany Reese. If you'd like to help support What Came Next, you can leave us a positive review, support our sponsors, or follow Broken Cycle Media on Instagram at Broken Cycle Media. Check out the episode notes for sources, resources, and to follow our guests. Thank you again for listening.